Hi, it's Diane, and it is Wednesday, March 21st. I'm here with a 3 o'clock group so far. We have Kara and David. Let's start with check-ins and celebrations. Who wants to go first?
Okay.
I guess. Go ahead.
Okay. Let's see, celebrations. I have a good one, actually. And this is a good follow-up on the last call, which was my first call. This is Kara.
Yep.
Declan, who's my son, we hadn't had much connection time because our time before bed, he was just really closing off. And he's been opening up more just generally to talking about different things, which is huge because it's giving me – well, access to them, basically, and it feels nice, too. So that's a celebration. It's just, you know, more time with more meaningful conversations and opportunities to have that. And then I forget exactly how the check-in works.
No, it's kind of what's been going on since the last time, so I think you kind of covered it both, and you've sounds like you've been focused on it and did a little bit of homework for yourself. What do you what did you notice worked well, and what didn't work so well?
I'm a little foggy about the last time. Last time it was about getting curious, because that's what we were dealing with last time. With regards to, he's had some inappropriate words and behavior towards girls, and he's become very interested in girls. So, you know, there was a challenge there and just getting curious because I didn't have access. Really, I didn't have much opportunity to talk with them. And this, you know, one of the things we talked about was asking him when he thought he would like to talk about it. And I didn't really get much there because he just kind of didn't respond. But it did open up nonetheless. So I don't know that I can quite pinpoint what was working. It's hard to say. There's so much that ebbs and flows with him.
Well, and the reality is that at the age that your kiddo is, that sometimes it's just about opening the door and seeing how wide it'll open, right? Because just kind of engaging them, sometimes it's about even having a conversation with them about having a conversation. You know, it's just really inviting and being open and taking whatever comes and not worrying about it, because you're really setting the groundwork for as maturity kicks in and the partnership and the everything else. And so it sounds like, you know, if you can stay in that place of curiosity, that'll give you some good information to keep moving forward. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. All right, David, what about you?
Well, let's see. Celebrations. Well, it's sort of a backward celebration. My son is struggling with appropriate use of language very much. And we've been pretty lax with him as far as letting him use YouTube, which I think is a lot of it. Of course, all the other 6th and 7th grade boys he hangs around with does not help at all either. So, but after just a really bad bout of it, I don't know, the day after daylight savings time was not a good morning for us, but I had enough. So I basically technically disabled YouTube at our house. So that I thought was going to be a giant problem, but it's turned out to be really good. He substituted Netflix, which is working much better, and he still gets the iPad as a reward, not all the time, of course. So I'm pleased with that. He is not quite so much, but it's not been a giant struggle. So that was a good thing.
Well, so I got to ask, David, so it sounds like it ended up being a win. What would you have done differently now that you're looking in the rearview mirror?
With that, I would have done it like, I don't know, 2 years earlier. And the problem is, it's a technical problem. There needs to be a subscription sort of thing for YouTube. Anybody can just – there's no kids'
so agree.
It's just annoying. So if you could just whitelist only this one channel or these five that are thoroughly good and don't, like, add anything else in automatically. But that's a different issue. So,
okay.
Other than that, I have been pretty lax about attending these calls, and my wife has been doing it somewhat. She's a little under the weather today, so I am on. So I don't really remember what I was trying to follow up on. So.
Well, that's all right. We're just glad that you're here.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. So I guess the question, David, then to kind of continue on is where specifically do you want to take aim? You mentioned something about appropriate language. Is that still someplace you want to focus on, or do you feel like YouTube's gotten you to another plateau and you want to focus somewhere else?
I think maybe focusing somewhere else. I was reading over the workbook today, and I guess, I mean, it's definitely in real life. I can see the get it done button definitely does not exist for my son. So, but, you know, novelty and fun, like getting up. We use the animals to get him up in the morning, and that mostly works unless he's super groggy. So then it's their fault, not my fault, for getting him up. And still getting to school on time is like a giant struggle. I mean, I want him to be there to the bus, you know, 5 minutes before, and he wants to be there 5 seconds before the bus arrives. So that's an excitement that I don't need.
Well, so does that mean, hang on a second, so does that mean that you want to, from a macro perspective, you want to take aim on getting up and out in the morning?
I think take aim on, like, trying to create some more acceptable motivations than urgency. More acceptable.
Okay. So getting up and out the door in the morning is a pretty big, giant thing. So I'm wondering, can we get curious for a minute and kind of see where you feel like he's getting stuck?
Well, I know where he gets stuck, and it's worked out great now that I take him with the dog to the bus stop every morning. He's got, like, this little extra boost to get out the door. It's been novel. It was working out pretty well. But now that we've been doing that for a while, it's not quite as novel. So I just have to keep getting creative.
Okay, so what you're saying is that if there's a motivator in place, you notice he does fine getting up and out the door in the morning, but you don't have – so it's not, there's not any one place. It's just literally, hey, buddy, if you get up by a certain time, here's what you get to do, and that works. But it's just, you've got to kind of go back and re-engineer so that you have a new motivator because the novelty's worn off, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, motivation for mornings. I just I want to be cautious because sometimes taking something that big, like mornings, can be hard to motivate a whole big thing if they're having a hard time and you might need to dig in. So let's stay open to kind of paying attention as we go through the conversation. But since you have an overall motivator right now and it was working, that might be the place to start.
Okay.
Cool. Kara, what about you?
Well, you know, it's funny hearing him talk about what he's doing. What's kind of helping me to see. I actually have had a problem. It's hard to decide exactly what to take aim on. Language has been a problem, as has it related to YouTube and music. I think it's more related to music. I already disabled YouTube because he was looking at inappropriate things. I think, well, maybe you can help me kind of narrow it down, because there's two things. He's been using inappropriate language, and I'm not sure where to draw the line, because one thing is he'll do it when he's, like, early in the morning or late at night, which, you know, he's really deregulated, so oftentimes I'll say something, but for the most part, I just let it go. I might say, you know, that's not to say, why don't you try to say something else or something like that. Or, you know, sometimes I might just walk away. But there's one thing that's been happening. It is after school, and it involves language, and it also involves him being inappropriate with girls. And the thing that's really difficult is, I mean, he's getting in trouble for it. He's actually been moved out of his group, which was where his friends are, into another group where he's less happy. And then he got called into the principal. He is saying, because it did happen one day, and he wasn't with me. We're a split family. He was with his dad that day. That was the first time it happened, which was about 3 weeks ago. And got a text from the teacher. And this is something that I brought up on the last call, where he said something like, he told a girl he had a nice butt, and there were some other pretty inappropriate things. And then the following Monday, he didn't have his medication. His dad didn't give it to him all weekend, which is unfortunate because it does help him. And he had a really bad day that day, so he ended up going to the principal. He had gotten physical with his friend. It wasn't as bad as what I'd been told originally, but then they also said that he was being inappropriate with the girls again. And I asked him, and he said he wasn't. And then it came up one more time, and he said he wasn't. And I said, well, you know, twice. I said, well, why do you think, you know, they're thinking that? And, you know, his answer is he doesn't know, which is kind of what I expected. And, you know, I told him, well, you know, if we can't figure out, you know, how to solve why they're thinking that, maybe you should just stay away from the girls. And I talked to his teacher about it last night, and I said, you know, he said he didn't do it. And she said, well, you know, it's coming from different people, so it looks like it's true. So that's something that's kind of new for me, because usually to date, I haven't really dealt with lying, or if he was, I could tell. And now he's getting a lot more sneaky, like with his sneaking, because I've disabled YouTube. I found that he snuck. I hid my computer, and he found it, which I was just like, oh, my gosh, you know.
Yeah. So hang on. So it sounds like, if I can interrupt you, Kara, it sounds like where you really want to take aim is on dishonesty and on having a hard time kind of owning up to what's happening. Is that fair?
I guess that's part of it. The other big part is the struggle that he's having with talking to girls and his hormones and, you know, everything surrounding that, because he's not handling it well. He's getting himself in trouble. But yeah, I think, I mean, the honesty is a big one, and it's not something I've had to deal with. So I suppose.
Well, and it may be, let's kind of play with it a little bit, but it's, the reality is that defensive dishonesty is really common, right? And so there's lots of reasons. There's actually, if you go on our website and type in lying in the search bar, you'll see several articles that we've written and some outside experts have written as well about lying and these kids and kind of what's behind it and what some of the challenges are and kind of how to approach it. But the reality is a lot of times he doesn't know why it happens. If it's an impulse control issue, all of a sudden it happens and he doesn't realize it's happening, or he's embarrassed because he did it again and he doesn't know he forgets that he's not supposed to. I mean, there's all kinds of things that could be going on for him. But it sounds like what you really want to do is to help him to continue to focus on helping him change his behavior as much as that is realistic. Is that fair?
Yes, very much so. Because, I mean, he could lose his spot. He could be kicked out of his after school, and part of that is the language too.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. All right. So this week we are talking about this idea of motivation, and I just realized as we look at this this page 46, we actually haven't updated the manual with our new acronym. So if you will write this in your margin, it's PINCH. PINCH, and that's how you remember the five motivators. And they are: P is for play or humor or creativity. I is for interest. N is for novelty. C is for competition. and H is for hurry up, which is that urgency one. And, you know, we talk about motivation a lot because it's such a key piece to getting the ADHD brain or the brain with executive function challenges to really engage at all. We talk about the just get it done button. David, you mentioned this earlier. And I, for one, you know, when I first learned this stuff, it was such a big aha for me that you really do need to have a motivation for virtually anything. Even adults who've had the same sorts of struggles have that same need to put a motivation in place. And the motivations may work for a little while. They may work for a long while. It just depends. And so part of this is about having a toolbox and not necessarily about a solution. And so I think the thing that I notice the most about kids is that if you observe them, you will see what motivates them. So a kid who loves video games, easy motivation is to figure out how to bring in video games into the motivation. So I had a parent the other night, that I was working with, it's working on her son's language, and when they ask him to get off his game, doing it without complaining. And so if he's, like today, if he was able to get off without complaining and without using poor language, then tomorrow he would get an extra half an hour and, you know, moving forward every day from there. So that's just one way to turn something that they're really interested in into a motivator.
How do you get the motivator happening the next day to have any effect on today, like right now?
That's a really good question. So part of the challenge is the age, right? And so thank you for asking that, David. Particularly, you know, you guys both have kids in that, you know, younger middle age range. Their awareness of tomorrow is far away, right? And so it might be that you need to put something in place today that they get for tomorrow. So handing them a coin that they could turn in tomorrow for 30 more minutes might be something that gives them something tangible now. And it may be that you want to use it, something that is more immediate. So my kids used to love story time. Yeah, so it's like you get an extra story, or you get to play a game with mom, or you get to stay up an extra 15 minutes and read a book by yourself or something like that. So it's about kind of finding something from a time frame that makes sense, that engages their brain enough. Is that what you mean, David?
Yeah. I think the coin idea would be possibly a good representation, as opposed to, you know, I just say it and it's like, yeah, that's nice, I don't care. So
So, but when they say, I don't care, so that may be something else going on. So let's get curious with that. So when he says, I don't care, on a scale of 0 to 10, how triggered do you think he is in that moment?
Well, I mean, it totally depends on the particular incident. I mean, if he's super, you know, acting up or something, and we try to come up with some kind of reasonable penalty in the moment, which, of course, never really works. You know, you pick the worst thing you can think of, and then that's the I don't care. So that's, you know, pretty triggered, and it's on both sides too. So we're working on that on our side, obviously.
Well, and so I think that that's an important piece, because if you're dealing with trigger management, it's really kind of different, and it's hard to do motivation in the middle of a trigger.
Right.
So what you got to do typically is you need to unwind from the trigger first, which is, okay, everybody's upset right now. Let's put things on pause for just a minute and regroup. And part of the challenge with that is if you're trying to get your child to transition off of something, you know, what do? You let them keep doing the thing that they they want to do. That's kind of hard. Or you know, let the blow up happen by turning off the electronics or whatever it is, and then you go back and regroup and come up with a motivator after the fact. But it's really important to kind of know that once a kid is in that trigger mode, their ability to really engage in a motivator is going to be different. Kara, were you going to jump in on something?
Well, yeah. Because two things, actually. I've been doing, because I wanted to ask your opinion on something. I've been using a motivator regarding video games, where he gets to earn, where he, if him and his he and his brother have different motivators, so they get different things. He gets 5 minutes of video game time for every time he does something without a reminder, like some self care thing, like just taking responsibility for himself, picking up after himself, you know, just getting ready in the morning, like, you know, get dressed, give yourself 5 minutes, brush your teeth, give yourself 5 minutes without a reminder. But it, mm-hmm. it's working a lot better for his brother, who doesn't have the same challenges, because it's, I think maybe it's too broad. I don't know. So I wanted to ask about that. And then when you were talking about when they're triggered, well, no, I'll skip that. Because I dealt with that yesterday. Like, I let him, he played the video game during the week, which he can't usually do because he had earned the time. He did his homework. He didn't, there was no complaints at school. So I said, okay, you can do it. And then later when he was tired and deregulated, he would not stop. Let me play. What, just 20 more minutes. Just 20 more minutes. Wouldn't stop. He probably asked me 20 times, why not? Why not? And I was like, man, you know, is this what's going to happen when I let you play during the week?
Well, and so I think that this is part of it, you know, so it's the, when you were talking about how it works differently, it does absolutely work differently for neurotypical kids than it does for kids who are struggling. And it may be that 5 minutes for, or, you know, 5 minutes for everything might be too much. So that's why we talk about taking aim and kind of getting really, really specific and not motivating, because it's hard to, for these kids to focus on so many different things. I think mm-hmm. that the other piece of it is, honestly, in all of this, we've got to make sure that the expectations are realistic. And I think that that's the piece that we end up, where we end up tripping up as parents, is we think, gee, if I would just motivate my child, they would be able to do this thing, when the reality is what we're bumping up against is an executive function challenge that needs to be accommodated, and it's not just simply about motivation. Does that distinction make sense to the two of you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. If
well,
you can't do it, even if you
yeah.
want to, the difference is you're not doing it to drive me crazy. He's doing it because he can't, or he's not doing it because he can't, depending.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's, you know, my rule of thumb is that realistic expectations are, if they can do it 80% of the time without a really strong motivator, then that's a realistic expectation. If you need a really strong motivator, like you're going to lose your Xbox for the rest of your life before they can do something, then it's probably not a realistic expectation that they could do it with a normal motivator. Because what you're doing is you're getting fear and urgency in there, and we go into fight or flight, and it's like, oh, my gosh, I would do anything right now not to lose my Xbox for the rest of my life because I'm all panicked or I'm triggered or I'm angry. And so if our kids are relying on that panic, triggered, angry thing to motivate them, their ability to motivate with regular things like rewards or, you know, even intrinsic motivation changes because they've just been focused on this sort of intense motivation all their lives. So we really want to kind of back off on realistic expectations. So, David, as you're thinking about the situation for you, what is a realistic expectation for him in the morning with a reasonable motivation?
Well, okay. So the current setup that we have, we've now established a routine that works really well as long as he's got sufficient rest. But without that, it just completely breaks down. And so I don't know if there's anything productive really besides trying to get him that rest, which we work on mightily. But it just depends on how he sleeps too, you know. So, I mean, he does fine the bulk of the time. It's just those mornings where he's, you know, gotten up on the wrong side of the bed is what they say, you know.
Well, and so I guess I'm curious, David, on those mornings, I mean, it's like, I don't know about you, but I have those mornings when I get up on the wrong side of the bed, and it's like, do I push through? Do I deal with the fact that I might be a few minutes late? Do I give myself some grace and give myself a hug and get myself out the door in the morning? I mean, what is realistic for those mornings? And I don't know, the phrase 80-20 rule just popped into my head. You know, how does the 80-20 rule apply in this
situation? It totally applies because, I mean, he's now in sixth grade, and for the first five grades he's been in, I expected him to be able to get out the door on time and get him to school on time, and we did our mightily best to do that. And now it's like he gets to have extra, what do they call it, Friday school on Fridays after school if he gets a certain amount of tardies and stuff. So there's some extrinsic motivation going on there that eventually builds up. It's not every tardy. It's, you know, he has to build up three or four pattern, basically. So he's got that built in. But, but no, I've given up trying to make it my responsibility. So, you know, I give him reminders and stuff.
Well, I guess that's really my question is, what do you do on those days where you know that it's a 20 day and not an 80 day? You know, do you say, you know what, sometimes I'm going to make it my responsibility because it's more important to get out the door than it is to have him do it independently if I know he's having a bad day. And you just have an agreement on how you handle it when you do. Or do you say, okay, you know what, it's going to be okay if we're late on those days, but it's more important for him to be independent. You know, how do you decide? Because there clearly are trade-offs. You could jump in and take over, or you could be late, or you could, I mean, there's lots of different choices in this.
No, it's taken a while to come to the realization that being late is not going on the permanent record in any material sense, so, I think.
Well, and it's really hard if you're, particularly if you're a family or you came from a family that has a high value around promptness, to have a kid that really has a hard time kind of helping you to achieve that standard makes it really difficult.
Yeah, that and doing homework and, you know, reading for pleasure and like about 20 other things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So how do you decide, David?
I don't know. I want to say gave up, but that's not really the right word. Became wiser to know that it's better to give up because it's not really giving up. It's ultimately letting him grow, but.
So what does giving up mean to you in this instance?
Just being okay with not using all possible pressure to try to get him to do something.
Okay.
So maybe we've done that too much.
Yeah. So can we do a slight reframe with this? Which sounds like you're adjusting your expectations.
Yep. Definitely.
Okay. So does that feel different than I'm giving in, just out of curiosity?
Oh,
maybe that's the language.
it's not really giving in. It's just, it's more realistic expectation than looking at it all in a longer-term perspective and with the view that ultimately it will help him grow more to let him, you know, in certain ways just not come through. It's just we've never been very good at figuring out the right in-the-moment consequences for these kind of things. So he hasn't really...
Well, so you say consequences, so I got to ask, let's talk about motivation and buy-in here. So we haven't really talked that much about buy-in. But is he more of a carrot or a stick kind of kid?
I kind of want to say stick, but...
Is that because that's you try every motivation and nothing works until you threaten?
Yeah. As far as we can, the motivations we can think of, yes, and maybe that's failing on our part. So.
Well, and my instinct on this, David, is that it's about how realistic the expectations are. And so, if you go back and you reset your expectations and put a reasonable motivator in place, you'd be approaching it very differently. So that's that same thing I was talking about earlier, where it's like you threaten, you know, you kind of get to the point where you tolerate, and then you threaten, and they're like, oh my gosh. But the reality is that they're having to get to a panicked
state before they can actually kick in. Whereas if they had some additional accommodation or support in the process, that a more rewards-based motivation might have worked differently. Does that resonate for you?
Yeah, definitely.
So, Kara, what's coming up for you as we're talking?
Well, I have a question first. Because I would say, when you were asking if he's a carrot or stick kid, I think my kid is a carrot kid. And sometimes I feel like in the moment when I'm desperate and I don't know what to do, like last night when he just wouldn't stop, I'm like, Declan, I gave you the answer. You need to stop. If you don't stop, you can't play the rest of this week. And that does no good because he's already wound up and he's just on this quest and he's not hearing. And then I feel bad because I know that. And it was just pointless. And then I question, well, should I stick to that? You know, and then I feel really inadequate because then I don't always stick to the consequence, or I'll make a adjustment and I'll explain it to him. But I think I probably do that too often. And I worry that that's causing a problem.
So if you were going to design an agreement with him on the front end that says, mm-hmm. I know sometimes you get triggered and it's hard for you to shut down and do things. And I don't want to have the same sort of punishment when you're in control as when you're out of control. What should we do? You know, and kind of figuring that out. And so it's that sort of, once they hit their escalation point, it's really hard for them to self-correct or to even correct when we jump in. So
yeah,
part of it is, okay, buddy, I can tell you're getting upset. Let's put our action plan in place to calm down. You know, so you have the action plan, you figure out, okay, so what are you going to do? I'm going to set down the controller for a minute. I'm going to take a couple deep breaths, and I'm going to talk to you about it. You know, so it's like participating in solving the problem. You know,
there's a couple problems I see with that, and it's kind of where I came from. He's also been diagnosed with expressive language disorder, and I even wonder if he's got the right diagnosis because I'm like, it's a complicated situation with him because it's so hard to communicate. Because I can see having a conversation, I think, and where we've been had the most success in kind of laying out things like this is when we'd go to his therapy session. We just suspended those for a while and we're going to start trying OT. But so if I'm successful in sitting down and making, I'd have to keep it really, really short and say, hey, and I'd probably have to drive it. I'd have to say something like, you know, probably bring up the situation last night. Okay, you know, last night you were insisting on playing more games, and he could get defensive there and say, you should have just let me play. It was only 20 minutes. It would have been fast. And then I might have to say something like, okay, let's stay on task. I want to plan for the future. So, I'm a little even stuck. So what am I saying? Okay, when you're having a hard time listening, we need an action plan. And what I think might work, and that I'm not sure what it would look like, so I'm getting a little off. So I'm kind of talking myself through this with you.
Well, so hang on a second. Before you do that, let's talk about buy-in for a minute, because I think that
okay.
What's coming up for me right now as you're talking about is the importance of buy-in. So with any of these challenges, if our kids have no real interest in solving the problem, their ability to kind of engage with us is going to be completely different. So a lot of times these things are problems for us, but they're not problems for them.
Yeah.
So on a scale of 0 to 10, how bought in is he to solving this problem over the conflict with the technology?
Well, he is very motivated by the video game. But it's such a tricky thing because he literally is addicted to it. And it doesn't take much time for him to get addicted. And then I'm dealing with that. So the motivator is a thin line. But that is the motivator. Like there really isn't much else. Even, like, I got him an iPad so he could make movies, because he's like, make movies. And even that, he's like, ah, you know. Because I'll tell him, you can play the iPad, you can't play the video game. Well, why not? Why not? I don't care about the iPad. So it's a video game. So I'm thinking I could tell him, okay, you know, based on what happened last night, to have the conversation. Because I think the motivator for him there would be, do you want to talk about how not to get a consequence and how not to lose your game? Because based on what happened last night, you're not going to play it on Friday.
Well, and I think that that's the piece of it, is kind of finding a way. And again, it's that sort of how not to lose it feels very different than how to keep.
Yeah.
How, you know, how to continue to have access. Because what, you know, what I'm noticing is that every time you use the game, you get hyper-focused. So I would encourage you to use words like hyper-focused and not addicted, because addicted feels a little charged. Is that fair? You get really, really, you get really involved, and it's exciting and it's fun, and it's really hard for you to break away. So,
well,
how
it, you know, it
are,
is like
how,
an addiction, though.
Well, it is, but I guess the question is, so the reason, so, no, and I don't doubt that it feels like an addiction. I think the question is, same thing I said to David about the language you use, right? So if you're like, oh my gosh, my kid's addicted, how does that feel compared to, wow, my kid is having a really hard time transitioning off something that he's excited about? It just feels, for me, it feels lighter. How does it feel to you?
It does feel lighter, but it doesn't feel complete, because the whole story is, it's not just transitioning off of it. It's that his mind thinks of nothing else and that he's irritable after he gets off of it.
Yeah. Well, and
so
it's hard. And so I think that's the piece. Right. And so going to him and saying, hey, buddy, I really know you love this game, and I'm observing some stuff that just doesn't feel like it's really healthy. How interested are you in working with me to solve the problem so that you can keep playing and I feel more comfortable that you're doing it in a healthy way?
Yeah.
And that's not 11-year-old language. That's mom-to-mom language, but it's that sort of, how does that translate into talking to him?
Yeah.
So you can keep playing part, and just that kind of phraseology is much more positive than, you know, or you're losing it less.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and
I think I have to be super clear, because I could see him coming back and saying, well, you said I could keep playing, like, and he'll take it as, like, indefinitely, you know. So I have to be very clear
too.
We all have those lawyer kids. Yep, that's true.
Well, no, that's when he cusses, that's what it is. It's just a word. It's just a word.
It's just a word.
I'm like, word that represents something.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I like that. Yeah.
So again, so it's both about buy-in. It's got to be their problem as well as yours, and then about motivation and being really clear if there is a motivation in place, and if it's timely, if it's specific enough. I mean, all of those things that will make it more and more successful. So, David, what do you think are the things, like, what are three things that really motivate your kiddo?
Well, let's see. So, screen time in general, so Xbox or iPad games or videos. He really likes a trampoline park near our house, but it's half socializing and half trampolining.
Mm-hmm.
And let me think, what else? A lot of it's screen, really. I mean, that's like the bulk of his time. I guess hanging out with friends at times, especially on scooters and skateboard and that kind of stuff. Those are three
What about competition? Or I'm trying to think of other things, like at school, what motivates him to do well in school? Does he really have a few favorite teachers that he likes? What do you notice?
I think, yeah, he likes at least one of his teachers. We had the opposite. He's actually now switched out of that class, thank God. He's not really super competitive as far as sports. never liked team sports. He's never really liked that.
Well, my kid used to love, let's see how many problems you can do in 10 minutes. You know, that was always, because that kind of competition where he was competing with himself, really he liked. My daughter with anxiety doesn't like competition, so you got to be careful. But some kids like that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, we can see what we can do. We're just in the phase, we're just now to the point where he'll actually do homework at home. Although, fortunately, they have after school homework time with his RSP teacher. So that's kind of working, because otherwise, homework for him is just a giant struggle. It's like, I don't have to do that. I'm not doing that. He won't ask for help. Getting him to see how many problems you can do that's a dream. That would be.
Yes.
Someday, maybe.
Well, so I think, again, so the exercise here is to begin to think about different things that might motivate, right? So instead
right.
of just screen time, because my guess is if I gave you both a challenge to say, watch your kid for the next week and see whether you can think of other things besides screen time that might motivate them, that you probably would come up with three or four things that they really do like. Maybe not as much as they like playing with their video games, but that they like.
Well, okay, but things that, like, can be turned on and off is what we're looking for here, right? Or just...
Not necessarily. I mean, it's like my kid's motivator for getting his homework done was he waited to have his ice cream until after his homework was done. Because he loves ice cream. And so he has ice cream every night. But he's like, oh, but if I tell myself that I can't have my ice cream until I'm done with my homework, then it'll motivate me to get my homework done.
Hmm.
Part of what you can do at age 11 and 12 is help them to understand the role that motivation plays in helping them be successful. And that can be a huge aha for them, to know that it's not that their brain is doing anything wrong, but that if their brain is motivated, their brain does better than if their brain isn't motivated. Then they can begin helping you figure out what are some of the things that might motivate them.
That would be very helpful.
So how would you start that conversation with him, David?
I think that I have noticed ... is a good start. Like that. At some points in the day, it's hard for us to stop with the iPad and get ourselves ready for bed. And we've been doing a much better job with that. Of course, I think the melatonin is helping a lot with that, too. But, and starting with something positive like that, you know, that I noticed this. And I was wondering what you thought we could do differently, or I don't know, what would help, and then kind of the fill in the blank of the area du jour. That's kind of what I'm getting from what you're saying.
Yeah, the story I usually tell about my son was that we were working on math problems one night, or it was like 50 problems. We split it between two nights. The first night he got them done in like a half an hour. The second night it's been like 2.5 hours. Same problem. And so I had the conversation. I said, what do you think was different? He goes, well, Mom, my show was on the first night. And so I wanted to get it done so that I could watch my show. Oh, well, isn't it interesting that your brain works differently when you're really excited to get to your show than when you're not? What do you do with that information? Yeah, so then he could go, oh, wow, I could create. That's when he kind of went, I get the motivation thing.
Yeah, that would, yeah, I guess I just have to wait for the right occurrence or keep observing and try to point that out.
Yeah. Okay, Kara, what about you?
I've had little bits of this conversation with them, but not much. In terms of what motivates them, like I said, the video game is the number one. Spending time with his friends, because, I mean, one thing, and this is kind of a negative, but since I look at it, he had been taken out of that group at after school where his friends are. And I think he's motivated and his behavior is getting better there because he wants to get back into it. And then, and also his teacher, because he was sometimes lying about homework and then he wouldn't do his reading. And if he doesn't, then he doesn't get to go to recess. He's in fourth grade, so I held him back here. So he's still in elementary school. And so he knows. So even like last night, I'm not going to read. He was just being defiant, but he did. And I said, well, you know, okay, but you won't be able to go to recess. And he did. He also has something he likes to read, which is a big deal. So I think, I mean, those are negative things, but I think spending some time, like dessert could be something. So maybe I'm trying to think I'm kind of with David on this. Like I'll have to pay attention to see where he needs motivation because I am acting as a motivator in so many cases. Like in the morning, I'm trying to get him to move without me because I told him, I'm like, hey, you know, I put this plan in place because I think it's pretty annoying that I'm always reminding you. And when I remind him of things, he says, what do you think? I'm stupid. And that's his thing. I'm like, and I just realized recently that statement is, because I'm reminding him of things he doesn't think he needs reminding of. And I'm like, okay. So I think I'm just going to have to notice and maybe ask him, like, hey, you know, maybe this would be a good way to do it, actually, to say, hey, you know, I put this extra video game, you know, plan in place so that you could, you know, remember things without me bugging you about it. Do you think it's working? Do you like that? Do you have a different idea of what might help? I don't know if that's specific enough, but I could kind of see that conversation. And
well, again,
I don't know.
Well, and it comes back to what is and isn't a realistic expectation. So there's a long way between him doing – so if you're reminding him of every step 17 times,
oh, yeah,
there's a long way – there's a long way from that to – him doing it all completely independently, right? So there's several steps of independence between here and there. And so I think that part of it is figuring out what is reminding him 16 times looks like? What does reminding him 14 times look like? What is, you know, it's that sort of kind of backing out and lowering the scaffolding. You know, is it him having a list and having him and you're going, hey, buddy, go back to your list. Where are you at? Or, you
That's
know, hey, buddy, where are you? Yeah. Hey, buddy, where are you in your process? So you're getting him. So it's
right.
That sort of, he may need that external, hey, buddy, oh, wait, I'm doing something. Because it may not be a realistic expectation for him to maintain focus that whole time. But once you go, hey, buddy, you're off track. What were you working on? He can go, oh, I'm supposed to be doing this. Right? And that's more independent
mm-hmm.
than you saying, buddy, are you done getting your shoes on?
Yeah. No, I think that, and actually it's funny because my younger son asked me for a list. Because then I told him, I said, okay, this first weekend I'm going to give you reminders, but after this I'm not going to give you reminders. And that's been kind of challenging for him too, and he doesn't have these same, you know, focus challenges that his brother does. So, you know, if he's having a problem with it, Declan's obviously going to be having problems with it. So, yeah. So I was going to make a list, too. And I think I'll do that now because it's been on my to-do list.
Awesome. Okay, so let's do our wrap-up. So I'm going to move on to page 47. Any closing thoughts before we ask our last four questions? Okay, what did I focus on most or pay attention to today? What's my clarity or takeaway? What's an aha that I had? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success with this action? So take a few notes, and I would love to hear from both of you at least one aha and one commitment in terms of what you're going to work on for the next couple weeks.
Well, I'll go first. I think my aha here is really just trying to continue to help him get motivated to participate in solving the problem. So, like with him getting to school on time, it's he's a little bit motivated because he has a big consequence with school. So I just need to keep looking for those and then have a discussion with him around those kind of things. How can, you know, I notice that when this happens, then this happens, and what do you think might help with that? So I don't know if I have anything specific as an action step at the moment.
Okay, well, it sounds like the conversation is one action. Anything else?
Yeah. I guess just keep thinking about other novel, pinch things.
Mm-hmm.
And try to come up with some more that would work if we run out, if our current ones get tired, overused.
Okay, cool. Carol, what about you?
I feel like I wasn't super focused today. It's funny. But there's a few ahas. I think what I ended up paying attention to, which makes sense because it's a topic, is the buy-in, but different ways to get him in the buy-in. Because I've been looking kind of at setting up motivations, but not necessarily including him in that solution. So, you know, and that would be the takeaway, too, or the next step is to have that conversation, find a way to have the conversation and get his solution, you know, get him in on creating the solution. So, i.e. making, you know, getting his buy-in and also the language that I'm using. So, you know, keeping it focused on the positive of what you can gain as opposed to what you will lose. And I think, I need to think a little bit more about how to phrase it. But because I started out wanting to take aim on language and the inappropriate conversations he's having with kids, and I kind of ended up focusing on video games. But it relates. It relates. So I'm still percolating. So I think after we hang up, I'm going to write some more in here. But and also looking at additional, like David said, with Pinch, additional ways to motivate him, and to get his attention. And it's interesting because play is up there, but I think it's not like his dad is really good at interjecting play into everything. I'm not naturally as playful and funny as he is, but I do notice that when I'm light and I'm playful, even about serious things, you know, it just goes, things don't get so bad. They can be dissolved faster.
Okay.
So I'm going to set myself up for success by having a conversation with him and getting his buy-in on the solution, and the solution that I'm going to try to get his buy-in in, and this is where I need to get some clarity, is what, how to respond when he's having a hard time listening and he's on his way to getting a consequence. How can we derail that and, you know, find a way to calm down and not get a consequence and just move on, I guess. And I don't know if that's exactly right. I'm going to have to work on that.
Okay. Well, so how willing are you to kind of just play with it and watch it over the next couple of weeks and see what you notice?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's exactly what I'm going to have to do.
Okay. Great. All right. Lovely call, guys.
Thank you.
Next call is in. So there is a Lifeline call next week on Thursday night, and then PSS the next. And then we have a spring break week for us. So we're off the week, first week in April, and then the next PSF call is the week of the 10th.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye, Dan.
Bye.
The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye.